Everything we do is music.
Acoustic space. Boundless, directionless, horizonless.
36.
20.
20. Welcome to 3620, podcasting from the basement of 3620 Walnut Street by the doctoral students at the Annenberg School for Communication here at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Deb Loy, and this week we bring you a reflective audio piece created by producer Alex Gomez called Eulogy for Net Neutrality. After hearing rumors of the death of net neutrality, Alex sought answers about what this political economic development could mean for the future of the internet. Hope you enjoy.
Alright friends, you have seen the heavy groups, now you will see morning maniac music. Believe me, yeah. It's a new dawn.
After I heard that Americans lost something called net neutrality in a court case this January, I sat down with four members of the Annenberg community to ask them, what is net neutrality and why do we care? I started with media policy expert Victor Picard.
Start out by defining net neutrality,
sure.
Right? Because this is what it's all about. Essentially, net neutrality is the long-standing safeguard that we usually take for granted, that internet service providers cannot interfere with or discriminate against online content. The decision that just came down with the DC Circuit Court negated, essentially struck down the open internet rules that the FCC had put forward in 2010. Of course, to understand how we even got to this point, we need to go back to probably 2002 would be a good place to start, when the FCC first decided to reclassify internet services as an information service instead of what it had been considered a telecommunication service.
Then we might have been able to defend network neutrality.
Robin Mansell is a professor of new media in the Department of Communications at London School of Economics. She's currently a visiting scholar teaching a course called Imagining the Internet, New Media, Innovation, and Information Societies.
For all sorts of reasons which are very specific to the history of communications in the United States, computer inquiries on upwards, where you've got this notion of information services don't touch them, telecommunication services regulate
them. Professor Joe Tureau believes that net neutrality is hugely important in understanding the digital ad environment, but that the jargon involved is too esoteric for the average consumer to take seriously.
The term net neutrality makes people's eyes glaze over. It just sounds legalese. It sounds like Washington speak. It doesn't grab. Maybe better ways to describe it to make people realize that, this is meaningful.
The structural mechanisms which result in the degradation of your X-Files viewing, and that's what kind of...
As a former full-time developer, Annenberg student Tim Liebert is quite familiar with the financial stakes of the so-called startup company. And of the importance of network neutrality to such companies' competition in the marketplace, but also for Tim's personal video streaming habits.
Coding, I think the startup scene part of it is the excitement and the possibility that we could come up with a cool idea and then just do it. Like, you don't have to ask permission, you get your server, you write your code, and then, hey, let's see if people like it. If you change the dynamic to you have to pay the ISPs, then you can't do that anymore, right? Because then it's like the conversation becomes, wow, it was a really great idea, instead of let's just go bang out a prototype and see what happens. That was a great idea. Let's go talk to the lawyer, let's go talk to our money guy, let's go talk to everybody else before you even start. That's the real danger, is that you're gonna introduce these barriers where you lose like the whole vibe of the startup, which is exciting. My job is to figure out like how to make more cash, and I'm AT&T. You've got to look at, you have a better resource than Google does for doing targeted marketing. And I think if you're AT&T and it's your job to figure out new ways to make money, and you weren't bringing that up, you wouldn't be doing your job. So I'm not sure if I blame AT&T to a degree, because AT&T's function in the universe is to make money for AT&T shareholders.
So when AT&T says we're going to start selling the ability of companies to reach people with free data if they watch commercials, for example, that's a sort of beginning of this in some interesting ways.
Electric company. Electricity. All the energy you want. All the service you need.
And as long as those specialized services agreements don't do damage to public's experience on the internet, it's going to be okay. How would you know if damage was being done? How would you measure it?
We wouldn't even be having this conversation about net neutrality if we actually had competition. If we were in a situation where we had any number of internet service providers to turn to, if one provider started interfering with our content in some way, we could obviously leave them and go to another provider. However, most Americans are in markets where, at best, they have two internet service providers. This is essentially a duopoly market. And so they don't have those kinds of options. They don't have consumer choices, and they're basically stuck with...
Knowing those kinds of things, knowing that there are choices to be made, knowing that it is not necessary for it to be only one supplier, for monopoly to take hold, but that is not the necessary outcome.
Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pave paradise, put up a parking lot.
I would encourage listeners to look at groups like the Open Technology Institute, which is part of a think tank in the New America Foundation. I'd also direct them to Free Press. There's a larger Save the Internet coalition.
Don't always seem to go. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. The pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
This brings us then to Verizon's alternative argument that even if, as we have held, Section 706A and 706B grant the Commission affirmative authority to promulgate rules governing broadband providers, the specific rules imposed by the Open Internet Order fall outside the scope of that authority. The Commission's theory, to reiterate, is that its regulations protect and promote edge provider investment and development, which in turn drives end-user demand for more and better broadband technologies, which in turn stimulates competition among broadband providers to further invest in broadband. Thus, the Commission claims, by preventing broadband providers from blocking or discriminating against edge providers, the rules, quote, encourage the deployment on a reasonable and timely basis of advanced telecommunications capability to all Americans and accelerate deployment of such capability by removing barriers to infrastructure investment and promoting competition.
end goal is to have, like, you know, a vibrant, diverse, and competitive economic structure. This is the exact opposite of what you want.
This often brings up questions about whether the FCC is what's known as a captured regulatory body, in the sense that it internalizes the logic and the values of the industry that is meant to regulate. This is another topic that's open for debate.
There's a whole debate about what the internet is going on sort of underneath the table amongst the engineers, and another debate going on in the courts. And the sad thing is, I think, that it goes on entirely outside the understanding of everyday use of the internet. We get the consequences. We don't get much chance to shape. That kind of critical literacy, all that about the whole media environment, means that users as school children sometimes should be given basic training.
Special thanks to Alex Gomez, as well as Victor Picard, Robin Menzel, Joseph Turow, and Tim Liebert. See you next time.
The views expressed on this podcast are those of its producers and do not represent the Annenberg School for Communication, its faculty, staff, or student body. The 3620 podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike International 3.0 license. That means you can remix, repost, or recycle any of the content as long as you aren't making money, you don't change the credits, and you share it under the same license.